I feel like I'm fixing to die. It's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The thick crust, deep dish, Chicago-style Medicare podcast. Killing people softly with his song, Medicare expert Doug Jones.
No, Randy, that's not going to happen. I'm not singing any songs. In fact, if there's going to be any music heard on this podcast, perhaps it should be our 30-second spot.
We can do that.
If you could play that now, I'd appreciate it.
I'll do it right now.
Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man 2020. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever.
Okay, that sounded good. That's music to my ears. As listeners paying attention might remember, our last podcast episode was recorded quite some time ago. It was in June, and now it's much later than June. But what we've done is we have burned off our collected backlog of podcast episodes. So many of the episodes you've been listening to were recorded quite some time ago. And we are now current. So you're almost listening to me speak this in real time, which is kind of scary. But what's not in real time is my nephew Drew McMillan's beautiful introduction. Those things are timeless. We have them recorded, and we just sometimes Randy and I just sit around and listen to them while we lament the financial difficulties that our small town is going through because of the virus. But basically, we are now caught up, and we will be recording current events as they occur or shortly after they occur. So consequently, I'm not numbering any more episodes. If you're listening for me to tell you what episode number this is, you're listening in vain. But eventually, I'll apply an episode number, and it will carry through to whatever app you listen to the episodes on. So someday there will be an episode number. I just don't know what it's going to be. So with that said, with the definition of what we do already done, with Randy almost being introduced, let's launch into the episode. Randy, how are you?
I'm doing well, Doug. I'm really anxious to get this phase of our podcasting life started. I feel like we've kind of had a reborn kind of a situation. We're talking about current events. However, it's not current or changed enough for my likes, because now we're still in the midst of the COVID, and I'm walking past the CHIP, and I'm walking past Harold's, and our state officials and their infinite wisdom have them locked down. So really, there's no purpose in walking by the CHIP and waving mailbag items at them.
Well, that is kind of a tragedy, except for the fact that now you'll be able to travel through town safely, you know, rather than being chased by angry mobs of mailbag hunting drunks. But I came up with a whole thing during our extended hiatus. I started thinking seriously about it, and I listened to a lot of our old episodes as though they were new, and some of them kind of were to me, and I realized that we had upwards of 20 minutes of goofing around before we actually got down to the Medicare part of the podcast, the meat and potatoes of the actual podcast. And so what I have thought about is maybe shortening our goofing around session or moving it to the end of the podcast, do the business stuff first. But, you know, we always wind up yakking at each other and telling stories, and your story triggers something in my mind. Frankly, that's more fun than talking about Medicare, but it's probably not more fun for the people that turn in to learn about Medicare. So I'm going to try to be a little more businesslike and to try to get us on track. And we have one hanging chad from a prior episode that we hadn't addressed, and I feel compelled to address it, but it's real short. Basically, I'm asked you one time, or I told you, threatened you, I guess. I said, one of these episodes real soon, I'm going to tell you why the railroad industry in the United States is right-hand drive when all of our cars are left-hand drive. The engineer sits on the right-hand, what would normally be the passenger side of a vehicle when he's driving a railroad locomotive. And the fireman, the helper, sits on the left side, what would normally be the driver's side in a car, but in this case, it's a railroad locomotive. And do you have any idea why that would be, Randy?
Well, I gave it some thought, and the only thing that came to mind was the majority of railroad engineers are left-handed.
Okay, that sounds like it could be a plausible explanation, but in reality, it's a much more mundane reason. Now, you might remember that the guy who invented the first workable steam engine, what was his name? He was in upstate New York on the Hudson River, and he put it in a boat. God, what was his name? I had his name right at
the tip of my... Mr. Steam.
Yeah, there you go, Mr. Steam. So he started concentrating on using steam engines to power boats, and the experimental waters he was doing this in were the Hudson River. So he managed to steam up and down in small boats with his new device on water. Now, when you took that same knowledge, that discovery of how to use steam to drive an engine, when you took that to England, rather than make it nautical, they thought about it more immediately than we did for land transportation. So in reality, the English were the first ones to really master the railroad, how to use steam in an engine to drag freight and passengers down a road, and now we call those railroad. They realized that in order to do it properly, they had to have it on rails. And so they had to choose the distance the rails were going to be apart, the gauge for the rails, and all that stuff. So by the time the railroad knowledge came from England to here, the same forces were at work then, back in the 1800s, 1830s, I'm guessing, as when the automobile was being worked on in England. They have right-hand drive in their automobiles, and they developed the railroads with right-hand drive. Well, the British engineers who came to America to design and build railroads were all Englishmen, and so they had right-hand drive in mind, and that's where all the signals were set up for the engineer to be on the right-hand side of the locomotive, and everything that needed to be done was put in the right-hand part of the locomotive cab, and it's because of the British engineers that came over here to help share the knowledge they had learned in England with railroad design and construction. So that's that hanging, Chad. I hope I've taken care of it to your satisfaction.
Well, I do have one more related question. We have 2 minutes to the seventh inning stretch already. We're getting way too good at this in terms of, speaking extemporaneously. But I do have a question.
Please do. Please.
Is there a relationship between why gentlemen back in the day would always walk their lady down the street and they would always be on the right-hand side, depending on what direction they were walking?
Weren't they always on the street side?
They were always on the street side. Now, so was there horses, any relationship between that and the right-hand drive in stagecoaches, right-hand drive in railroads?
I don't believe so, because what they were doing was protecting their ladies from runaway horses and from the pee water that was splashed by rapidly buggies going by real fast, and I guess later automobiles splashing through puddles and getting people wet. So gentlemen were only protecting their ladies from being either hurt or soaked, and not thinking about who's in charge of the pair next to each other walking down the street. But I did remember the name of the steam engine guy, Robert Fulton.
Yes, Fulton.
Yeah, but he concentrated on boats, and it was other people later on that took that same knowledge or, you know, the accomplishment and translated it to railroad. And so you got not only why are the engineers on the right-hand side of the cab is going down the track, but also why was the gauge of our railroads 4 feet, 8.5 inches, and they allow a little bit of fluctuation, 0.5 inch one way, 1.5 inches the other way. The gauge of the railroads is based on a very historical fact that you might have read about. People that get a lot of emails, nonsensical emails, would have read about this. But if not, if you don't recall, then I can leave that for a hanging chad for a future episode.
Well, let's do that. I love that kind of stuff. I've got one hanging chad to leave too.
By all means, do that.
For next time around. And if I could just think of it, I would tell you. All of a sudden, it dropped right out of my mind.
Okay, well, let me give the short Medicare meat of our subject today. I have a neighbor, and this neighbor is very paranoid about his company finding out who he is and where he works. So I'm just going to say my neighbor's name is Ronnie X. He's not a member of the Black Muslims, but Ronnie X will be his name for these purposes. Works for a huge company, thousands and thousands of them. Typically, in a huge company, when you turn 65, the company's medical insurance plan is primary. And your Medicare coverage, if you have any, would be secondary. So in reality, an employee turning 65 and working actively at work for a huge, big company, anything over 20 employees, does not have to get Medicare coverage because their employer's group plan pays the freight up front. That's the government's way of saving money. We'll put it back on the employer. So the employer has a group medical plan that he's paying for, and the government says yours will be primary. That makes it much more expensive for the company that operates in the private sector, but it makes it much less expensive for Medicare. So my neighbor, Ronnie X, works for this big company, but he was talking to some guys, friends of his, on the job, and they were all of the opinion that it was absolutely essential when you turn 65 to enroll in Medicare Parts A and B within that 3-month period, either 3 months before or 3 months after your birth month. Otherwise, you'd be stuck with a lifetime late enrollment penalty. Now, here's the flaw in the thinking. That would be true if they weren't working, but since they're actively at work, it is not necessary for them to enroll in either Part A or Part B until they're going to leave the employer's plan. Now, I always caution people, you know, run this by your HR department just to make sure. But generally speaking, this is the law. If you work for a company with 20 people or more on the group plan, your employer's medical plan is primary and you're in good shape. Then I suggest that people get Part A when they turn 65 because it's free of charge anyway. So unless they have an HSA plan, Part A is a no-brainer. Sign up for that. And then you're on the books of the Social Security Administration when it's time for you to get Part B, which you put off as long as you can because it costs something. There's a monthly premium. Right now, this year, most people are paying $144 a month. Well, my friend Ronnie X was misinformed by his coworkers, and so he ran out and enrolled in Medicare Part B. I found out about this. He's been past his 65th birthday by a couple of years. He's been paying upwards of $130, $140 every month for a couple of years because he got Part B and he didn't have to. And he was let down because he said he did go to his HR department and some clerk brushed him off and said, no, you're fine. Go ahead and get Part A and Part B. And so these people really cost him a bunch of money out of his pocket. Now he's afraid to do anything. I don't really know the consequences of dropping Part B and then picking it up again later. I promised him I'd research that and I'll share that with the listeners in a later episode. But it's just kind of a shame that he could have been buying much more expensive beer for he and I to share, but he can't because he's got a monthly outlay of $144 this year that he did not have to incur. Fortunately, he's a successful guy, and so it hasn't dented his cash flow too much. But I just thought I would share that, because if you listen to your friends and if you go to your HR department asking for advice and you don't twist their arm to make them pay attention and give you a thoughtful, correct answer, then you could wind up making a bad decision. And that's never something that I would want to see happen, but it happened to my friend Ronnie X. So that's the Medicare hint for today. And I was so excited to be able to, you know, save some time for a mailbag item or two. And what happened? The mob that generally chases you and demands more mailbag activity has had to go home because they closed down the bars in Cave Creek.
That, which is never a good idea in Cave Creek.
That's a heartbreaker.
I mean, really, the only choices we have now for any sort of liquid refreshments, there aren't any.
Well, when I get back to Arizona, sometime in September, I'm thinking, then at least we'll have each other.
Yes,
so you
absolutely.
Can come to my house, I can go to your house.
And will you make me wear a mask?
No, I won't.
Okay, that's good.
Unless you've gotten uglier.
Well, that I can't speak to, because that's a daily ongoing process. But I do have one more hanging chad that I'm going to leave. We have a few minutes here that I can leave a hanging chad for next time.
You can do that, and I feel compelled to do a mailbag item every time we have an episode.
Well, let's do a real quick hanging chad, and then you pull out a mailbagger.
Okay.
Because we've got three minutes left, and we're going to try to stay on schedule better than we did before.
All right.
So if you were a railroad engineer and you had to pull a significant load of freight over the Rocky Mountains,
mm-hmm.
Would you prefer to have, and again, you know, the Rockies are pretty high altitude. Let's say the Sierra Nevadas, if you don't like the Rockies. Would you prefer, now I'm speaking metaphorically, would you prefer to have a 10,000 horse diesel or a 10,000 horse steam locomotive?
Oh, steam. Steam, because the torque comes in instantly at the maximum that it's capable of, and it stays there.
Because it's got no relationship to the high altitude lack of oxygen.
Right. Well, that's one of the reasons, but a steam engine, even at sea level, is going to outperform a diesel every time because the torque is almost instantaneous. Whereas a diesel has compression and you're accelerating based on dumping more fuel into that diesel. The steam is, it has no, oh boy, how can I put it succinctly? It has no ability to compress. It doesn't use fuel, but diesels use fuel and compress the mixture. Steam can't be compressed.
Right, yeah.
And so it expands constantly. But I did, one of our old Corvette trips, I've told you about these trips where a bunch of us drive around the country in Corvettes from the 1960s. One of them, we were headed out to Vancouver, and we went through Glacier National Park and then stayed for the night in the town on the outside of the west entrance to Glacier National Park, which I think is Whitefish, Montana. And I heard trains all night long, and somebody told me in the restaurant I think we ate in that there was a big circle that the freight trains would be approaching the mountains, and then they would go around in this big giant circle, maybe 10 miles around. I hope this is true because it was pretty cool, just to build up some speed to get up through the high pass that they had to negotiate in order to get across the highest part of the mountain.
Yeah.
And just to listen to these freight trains all day and all night, it was, you knew something fun was going on there that I wish I had had my Lionel set up. I would have tried to build something to duplicate that.
Well, I'm still into trains. So I ask my wife every Christmas, can I have a new train set? And she looks at me sideways and it doesn't happen.
I don't have to ask my wife because I still have the one I started collecting when I was God, I want to say 1953. I was 5 years old when I got my first Lionel, Christmas time. And it was then added to and added to and added to over the ensuing years until finally I had to put it all away. And it's been waiting for me to come and unpack it. But it's on my important list of things to do.
That's right. As well it should be. Yeah. And the other thing that we need to speak to is let's thank our listeners for once again coming back to join us on our merry way down the podcast route for Medicare for the LazyMan.com. We really enjoy speaking to you every week, sometimes twice a week. We enjoy the heck out of it, and we look forward to seeing you next time. But in the meantime, you have spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Medicare for the LazyMan.com.
Bye-bye.